Originally, this was put into APHA by John Moravitz, who is the director of the International Chemical Workers Union Health and Safety Training Center, which has been a grantee of the NIHS for 125 years. And I have no relationships to disclose. And here's just some context. And I got this from a report, I think it's on the next page. Lots of fatalities, high winds. The events actually occurred over a course of time, but hit the East Coast on the 29th of October, and the areas affected were really extensive, and not just the United States. Second costliest event, hurricane next to Katrina. The deaths, here's a breakdown by state that were associated with Sandy, and interestingly, Region 2 of OSHA, which covers New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, reported 16 occupational-related deaths in Region 2. So that would be 48 and the 12 from New Jersey, that's a subset of them. Although if you look at the detail, interestingly, some of the deaths of the homeowners were the same type of events that caused deaths among the workers, trees, electrocutions, falls, etc. 650,000, here's my source, the Tropical Cyclone Report. You can get it on the internet. 650,000 homes damaged or destroyed. And if you go into the disaster zone, this is a typical picture of what you'll see. And in terms of how we approached developing the training, we did basic hazard assessment. I was able to work with some of the volunteer groups, World Cares Center. We worked with, John worked with New York Cares. And we got access to their operations. And what these volunteer groups were doing, they were bringing in people from AmeriCorps, from some of the religious groups like Presbyterian Disaster Relief, and they would they had to coordinate their housing because they were coming in from all over the country, and there's this whole network out there. And so we got access to observe some of their cleaning, gutting, and mucking, and mold remediation, and took photos, which we used, as well as some of the photos from Rutgers we integrated into the materials that Deborah described. We were told that a lot of the unionized workers already had training, and we did try to connect with the non-union day laborers. There was a $27 million federal grant to hire 15,000 unemployed workers, and they were hired for towns, villages, counties, and this was from the U.S. Department of Labor. And we were able to track where the funding went, but we were not really successful in getting the unions or the counties, cities to work with NIEHS and its grantees to do training. And we did talk to OSHA. OSHA is another agency within the U.S. Department of Labor, and they are trying to create an agreement with the U.S. Department of Labor Education and Training Fund that there'll be some basic safety and health training requirements built into future grants. So one point I want to make, I'm at the end of my presentation, I guess, is that we've learned things that I think will be useful in other disasters. And I think Deborah's slide about global warming, we're expecting more frequent events. So we went to the site. Interestingly, this is the Presbyterian disaster team from Woburn, Massachusetts, and they come with their own power tools, by the way. And this is the homeowner. She's originally from Haiti, and her grandfather died in the earthquake. And they were gutting, mucking on the particular day that we were there in Far Rockaways. One of the interesting things in New York is many of the communities that were affected by the storm are working class communities, and it's not like some parts of the country where the coastal areas are the homes for the rich and the famous. So a lot of this volunteer activity, it's because about 50% of these homeowners had no insurance at all. There was no relief from the government, and so it kind of created fertile ground after 20, 30 years of cuts in public health and et cetera for these volunteer groups to step up and fill that void. How generalizable that is to other storms in other parts of the country, I don't know. Another thing is that the volunteers are not covered by OSHA. OSHA is constructed to make requirements for employers. And so when we developed the training, we still felt that the OSHA standards, they're minimum standards, meaning that that's the least that an employer should comply with. And we encouraged the volunteer organizations and the folks that they were training to understand OSHA and to, you know, that they should also use OSHA standards as a minimum basis for protecting the volunteers. We did find that some of the volunteers had previous experience. Some had volunteered for Katrina, Rita, other storms. Some had had training, 40-hour HAZWOPER training. Some had been trained under the NIEHS programs. And that was important because teamwork and communication among the people doing the cleanup is a huge part of the training, buddy systems. And if there's people with expertise in that team, you want the people who don't have it to be able to identify them as a resource. There was a lot of donations of personal protective equipment and respirators, but it wasn't necessarily in conformance with OSHA requirements. There was problems with not having different sized respirators, for example, and there was no fit testing and medical clearance. I'll mention more on that later. Mainly the volunteers did not use containment methods that are recommended. In other words, if you have a moldy area, but then there's another area of the home that isn't moldy, you want to contain the non-contaminated area, and you do that with plastic and with ventilation. And so that's a gap that needs to be addressed. And a lot of the work, it turns out, that the volunteer groups have done is it has to be done over. The mold is coming back. These are just some of the real-life pictures. Mitch was mentioning about other hazards. One of the things in the training is to shut off all the power, and in this case, we found some live circuits. The crawl spaces are a big issue because they're dirty and nasty, not designed for human occupancy. There's dead animals sometimes in there. And also, it's a major problem for mold remediation because they tend to be very wet and a pathway for future moisture to come into the building. We observed this in one of the places that was being worked upon. It was a power washer emitting carbon monoxide. So that's a major hazard. There were a number of fatalities due to carbon monoxide related to Sandy. And this is just an example of some of the products that you run into in the field and, that were being sprayed in this case by some of the volunteers. And if you look at this picture, what's wrong with it? We would use that as a training method. What's wrong with this picture? And the answer is there's no respiratory eye or head protection. And this has already been addressed, the extent of the mold problems. This is an example of how the cleaning is done with detergent, spray, and a scrub brush. But even though this was the team leader, and he had actually come over from Japan, where he had been involved in the events over there, very experienced team leader, but you can see his goggles are not in place. And Deborah mentioned about the materials. This is a group. We did actual training of some of the volunteer groups, And there were tremendous difficulties. No chairs, no LCD projector. The volunteers were coming in and weren't notified that there was going to be training. You can be sure to get a bad evaluation by doing that. You know, they're expecting, raring to go to do this volunteer work, and all of a sudden they have to spend the first 2-3 hours of Monday morning in training. Not a good thing. So some of those are some of the real life dynamics that have to be addressed in working with the volunteer groups. We also did hands-on stuff. There was a success story. The AmeriCorps group adopted the half-face respirators with a P100 cartridge and used the 3-hour training that was being offered. And, you know, that was a very good thing. Although they don't have any capacity to do medical screening or fit testing. So we did it, you know, this is a picture of some of the AmeriCorps folks donning the respirators. We didn't want them to have to don the respirators for the first time when they're in the field doing the work. And just from observing people trying to don it, they didn't know how to do it. They really needed that type of instruction. However, they haven't been properly fit tested. And one of the things that we did do is we cautioned people about medical conditions, which would be part of the medical screening. And people, one example, there were 50 people being trained. About 6 of them said, okay, I'm not going to expose myself to mold because I had a heart attack or I have asthma. But really, there should be for disasters the capacity to do that before people deploy to the disaster site. That's a gap. The good news is that there was a study by NIOSH that was presented at a scientific conference in New Jersey. The study was of 600 homeowners from Katrina, and about 68% of those homeowners did cleanup, and about 62% wore an N95. So what the researchers did is they had these homeowners put on the respirator. Some of them put it on upside down with one strap. Some had beards. But the good news was that even with those problems, they weren't fit tested and they didn't, a lot of them put it on improperly. The ones who wore the respirator had a lot less mold and water damage related symptoms than the ones that had no N95 at all. You know, I still feel personally that that a higher level of respiratory protection is warranted if you have a greater amount of contamination. And I, you know, this is a debate. New York City kind of set a lower bar than some people in the industrial hygiene community recommended. So these are some of the future activities, you know, that are being worked on by ICWUC and NIOSH and some of the other training organizations under NIEHS. And some of the goals is just as NIEHS created this infrastructure 25 years ago, so that all over the country, all these workers who work with hazardous materials get, you know, the various hazardous materials trainings. We need to do the same thing with these volunteer groups because they're the ones that are in the game in terms of responding to these events, and they don't have that infrastructure. They don't have health and safety trainers. They don't know what the standards are, and so that, you know, we've kind of got a lot of work to do to build that, and I'm hoping that to see that not only that we'll be able to continue this work with the volunteer groups that Mitch is doing and NIOSH and others, but we'll be able to build that into future NIEHS activities. And I think it's important for the labor movement to, you know, reach out to these other partners because right now the labor movement has a lot of expertise in health and safety. that can help in these disasters. This was one of John's slides, very practical. These are the things that we need to address in the response. And one other thing I want to mention in the last minute that I have is that Mayor Bloomberg, the American Red Cross, the Robin Hood Foundation came up with $15 million. And LISC is the local initiatives to support communities. And they created this program to do mold remediation, gutting and mucking in 2,000 homes. And if you go to their website, the criteria are really impressive. They do a home assessment. The contractors have to have a scientist on staff with 3 to 5 years of experience. The training for safety and health was part of it. The minimum for respiratory protection was a half-face respirator. And then there's a separate specification for contractors to do the evaluation quality control. And I think this model potentially should be replicated for other disasters, because what happened once this got in place was the volunteer groups started referring to LISC a lot of the muck and gut and mold remediation. And, you know, they also did the drying of the home afterwards, which is just a critical step before you do the rebuild. So here's some of the implications, and I'm
looking for stop.
And that's the question. Where's the next storm? There we go.